Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because with us today, we have Ralph Gross. Ralph is an angel investor, as well as investor and partner with Scroobius. Ralph, welcome to the podcast.
Christian, thank you very much. Wonderful to meet you, and thank you so much for having me here as a guest today.
Oh, my pleasure. So why don't we kick things off with Scroobius? Would love to know what problem Scroobius is solving in the market.
Sure. Today, there are challenges, systemic challenges for a segment of founders, wonderful people doing amazing things, great building, great companies, great ideas, great teams, but are challenged when it comes to accessing capital. Predominantly, this is an underrepresented group, women, people of color. But that notion of underrepresented is very broad. So it could be people such as veterans. It could be people with disabilities. So it's a very broad cross-section of individuals who are just perceived as risky investments. And where the perception of the probability of success is low. That doesn't line up with the actual reality, but those are the perceptions that impede their ability to access capital. Conversely, there is a broad network of angel investors to the tune of approximately $500 billion worth of investable assets that are looking for deal flow and opportunities to invest in great ideas and great companies and great people. And Scroobius is a platform that is building the connective tissue between those angel investors looking for investment opportunities and these founders who are searching for the capital to grow, scale, and flourish with the businesses and the business ideas that they are attempting to execute on and bring to market.
Got it.
That's Scroobius in a nutshell.
Okay. Makes good sense. So is Scroobius acting like a matchmaker, or will it also invest its own capital?
Scroobius is acting more of a matchmaker between the founders and the investors. We're also not looking at the feasibility or validity of the ideas. That's not our place, but a very much an active matchmaker between I've heard it even described as something like the investmentmatch.com.
So, okay.
We're not investing in these ideas, but matching the ideas with people who do and are interested in investing in them.
You know, and obviously making capital available to founders is extremely valuable. I mean, I've read statistics that say they produce more jobs in the U.S. than medium and large enterprises. But it's obviously unfortunate that there are perceptions that there may be additional risks because you're in a certain cohort. I'd love for the audience to hear, it's like, what do you think drives some of that risk? And, you know, notwithstanding making these connections, what are some of the things that can be done to help mitigate or like diminish these perceptions?
That's a great question, Christian. Before I launch into my perspective of what that looks like, let me just say that my own personal philosophy, I believe the universe to be a very connected place. And so these elements and aspects are not disparate by nature. And that perception of risk, so when I was in corporate America, I was a CIO for a number of very large global financial institutions. And one of the things that we noticed was the lack of, and I know this is a challenging word in this environment, but I'm going to use use it because the facts are diverse teams produce better results. That's a scientifically proven fact. And as a technologist, faced with some really, really challenging type of problems, and I don't often use that word, but I'm intentional about it here. You want the best minds, and you want these diverse perspectives, these people who are thinking out of the box, who are thinking perhaps contrary to how you and I might perceive a problem as men. And in my case, as a person of color, in your case, as a white man, another case, as a woman, another case, as an immigrant, someone not from the United States, all of these diverse perspectives. And because of how we are socialized, you see, you look at the picture behind you and see something that I don't and I can't. And I look at it and see something that you don't and you can't. But when we bring those things together, we're able to produce solutions and capabilities that neither one of us could do on our own, or neither one of us could do if we were sitting in a room full of people who looked and thought just like us. And so, but the perception is that in many cases, that these other groups are somehow riskier, that women, for instance, who are creating companies faster, the fastest demographic that's creating, starting companies, that somehow their ability to start great companies and produce and execute on those ideas and produce profitable results is somehow diminished by the fact that they're women, is just a perception that doesn't fit the facts. And the facts are that they are the fastest growing group when it comes to starting companies, and their ability to execute on those ideas and produce profitable results is actually second to none. So we have to get the word out about that. We have to get the facts out about that and begin to attack those systemic beliefs and perceptions with countering them with the facts and helping people understand that investing in these businesses by these group of founders is actually really, really good business and really creates the opportunity, amplifies the opportunity to produce great results by investing in them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, you know, as I'm listening, you know, cognitive biases in our species is unavoidable. You know, I think everyone has them. You know, I can remember reading an article, maybe last time I looked, there was like 100+ different ways that we sabotage our thinking. Outside my area of expertise, but you know, like one that comes to mind is price anchoring. You know, you walk into a store and a salesman shows you a really expensive suit that you're not going to buy. Then they show you one that's in your budget because now you're thinking of that more expensive one. You're more likely to buy a less expensive one. List goes on. But I think you bring up a really good point, and that is, you know, if you were to be completely objective, everyone's going to agree that you want the biggest return on your investment, notwithstanding, you know, helping a group that may not have the same amount of access to capital. But if you think about it, it kind of makes sense that from an investment perspective, that if you have an asset that's not being as looked at as closely as, you know, Tesla, or another public company, I argue that there's still a tremendous amount of value in an early stage company that's getting less looks, because the market hasn't priced all the value into it. So that point alone, I think, you know, really speaks to the value that sounds like Scroobius is bringing to the market. Because how many angel investors, you know, are getting to otherwise meet these founders?
You're absolutely right. So there's that element. And if you think of it in my personal investments, I subscribe to the philosophies of Warren Buffett a lot. And Buffett's whole premise is finding hidden gems, undervalued assets that the market has not appropriately priced because they don't appreciate the inherent value. And so he can buy those undervalued assets at a price point that doesn't reflect their true market worth, the true market value, and then see them appreciate in value, thereby maximizing, optimizing his return on the investment that he made. So there's that element. The second element is an economic, and I'm an economist at heart, in addition to being a technologist and an author, wrote a book and all that good stuff. If you could invest a dollar, if the supply and demand in a market economy, value is determined by supply and demand, one element and one aspect. So if you can invest a dollar in a asset that would return you the same amount of value as a dollar investment in another asset, but because of the perception of risk and other systemic biases, your investment of that dollar in this asset gives you a greater return, because for a dollar, you get 20%, 30%, 50% of the asset, as opposed to a dollar in someplace else where you get 10%. You would continue to make those investments until the supply of those opportunities would diminish relative to the demand, where you reach equilibrium. So here you are with an undervalued asset and the opportunity to invest in them, and at a greater level rate of return. You should do that all day, every day, until you reach equilibrium, whereby you would be agnostic to one or the other. So this is just great, not even good business. This is great business. This is a great opportunity to maximize, you know, the return on your investment, the utility, the optimization, as well as, if you're into this, as well as helping and, you know, creating equity and parity where it should exist.
So I think you make a great point, which makes me think of, you and I both know that, you know, relative to return, there is risk. And, you know, no fault of any particular cohort, regardless of who they are, you know, you know, that you're always going to run into challenges. It's just, I would argue, what's the degree? You know, has Scroobius started to take steps then to help mitigate those risks? You know, one of the things that comes to my mind is maybe mentorship. You know, just as a group, I would argue all founders don't know everything, even if this is their second rodeo. And there's always tremendous value in talking to someone who's, you know, gray haired, more experienced. So, you know, love to get your perspective, whether or not that's something you started doing or thinking about doing, or other steps that platform takes to help enable founders.
So there are mentorship opportunities on the platform. We have created a proprietary set of materials that teaches, informs, educates, connects founders to resources that can help them, help mentor them, help coach them. The information that we are providing helps them create really compelling pitch material, gives them a comprehensive, in the moment, real-time feedback on those components of their pitch deck, helps them formulate, you know, ways in which they can articulate what they're doing, why they're doing, what problems they're solving with the solutions that they're putting forward, that tells the compelling story around why they are investable, how those investment dollars are going to be put to use to further their solutions and their capabilities that the company is providing, and pulls that together into a package that they can then present to investors who have an interest and something of a bias to help founders in this category, because those investors represent or understand the economic and profit opportunity that these founders represent. So we provide all of that on the platform. It's part of the service offering that we provide to founders. And it really helps give them a leg up with respect to securing the capital and the assets that they need, information, resources that they need to grow their companies and scale their companies.
That's fantastic. I do have some follow-on questions, but I think before asking, it may be more appropriate for me to ask you to share with us your background as an angel investor first.
Sure. So my background as an angel really is born out of my own investment activities. You know, I grew up at a time in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My father was an individual investor at a time when those kinds of people were rare, and certainly rare in the African-American community. And I remember him attempting to educate me on his investment strategy. He was kind of forceful about it. I'd rather be outside playing basketball or baseball or something of that nature. And he's having me read, you know, go through the Dow Jones and all those kinds of things. But began investing my own book many, many years ago. And that led to me, was part of the company that I was trying to start about 20 some odd years ago. Think of Robinhood 20, 25 years ago or so. I tried to start that. I was unable to raise the capital needed to continue scaling and growing the company after investing a significant amount of my own capital into the company. And after that venture, began looking at other founders and other angel kinds of investment opportunities and continued to do that. So that's how I got into investing. That's how I got into angel investing. And that's how I got into starting my second company, which was, interestingly enough, an art gallery headquartered on Martha's Vineyard called Nowhere Art Gallery. And then that led me to meeting the founder of Scroobius, a woman by the name of Allison Byers, phenomenal woman who also had, this is her second startup, also had experience around raising capital, doing a price round of raising and being unsuccessful at that. And that led her to start Scroobius. We were connected by a common friend of ours and was an early investor in the company and then wound up joining the company this past September. So that's my journey.
You know, a bunch to talk about too. You know, I love the fact too that it sounds like the art gallery is still very much part of your time today. But, you know, I have to hone in on the fact that, you know, failures teach us so much. For point of reference, I co-founded a telemedicine company with two physicians nearly 10 years ago. And also I had to close doors. The way I think about it is, and I attribute this to Nelson Mandela, but I don't know if he actually said it, but I'll say it anyway. I remember reading once, he said something to the effect of, you know, win or learn, I never lose. And it's true. I learned what not to do with an early stage company. And so with that, I'd love to know how your experience informs your angel investing today. You know, what do you look for in an opportunity when you're making a decision of whether or not to invest?
So for me, it starts with the people. I played college basketball, Division I college basketball for a Hall of Fame coach, Rick Pitino. And one of the things that Coach Pitino, among many things that he said, and he was and is and continues to be an amazing influence on my life, is that you win with talent. Now, that's a kind of duh sort of thing, but it applies to every asset or every facet of your existence. So in corporate America, as I was building teams, you know, I'm very conscious of bringing talent to the team. And when I'm doing angel investing, I'm very conscious of who am I talking to? What are their skills? What are their capabilities? What's their thought processes? What are they like as a leader? What's the talent that they're assembling around themselves? Are they, you know, the kind of leader that has to be the sharpest person in the room, the be all and end all, or are they comfortable building really, really talented individuals, teams in areas where they may not have the level of expertise and understand their role as a leader, not to be necessarily the sharpest person in the room, but the one that clears the way so that everyone can be the best at what they are in the segments that they're responsible for. So for me, it starts with the team. Second thing is, what's the problem domain? What problem are they trying to solve? So I've seen great teams, great individuals, great leaders who seemingly are pitching ideas, at least to me. And I could be wrong, because quite frankly, when Google first came out, I didn't see that. Google, a search engine, you know, kind of like in a library. So I don't always get it right. Let's make that clear.
Sure.
But are they looking for, is their solution the kind of solution that's looking for a problem to solve? So it's a solution looking for a problem, as opposed to there is a real opportunity out there, a real challenge. And this solution appears to be a feasible, viable solution for what is a true problem or true opportunity. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing kind of goes back to the first thing, which is, okay, so we've got a great team. These are really good people. They understand what they're doing. They seem to be capable, seem to be great leaders, seem to be able to work together effectively. They've got a real problem with a real solution that would seemingly work. Can they execute? Can they really do what they say they can do? And what's their commitment to making that happen? So when I see those three things come together, and then the fourth thing goes back to my own personal investments, and it goes back to something from Buffett. I tend to try to invest in things that I understand. If I don't understand it, and that doesn't mean it's a bad idea, but if I don't understand it, then not only do I not, I question my own thought processes to whether or not I'm capable of truly assessing what's going on here, but beyond the money, I really can't provide any assistance or expertise or help. And, you know, I want to be able to do that, assuming that my help and guidance is appreciated. So great team, solution that is affecting a real problem, their ability to execute in my ability to assess that, and then do I understand what they're doing? Those are the four things that I kind of that guide me in terms of my angel investing.
I mean, I think those are all great decision points. One of the things, we could talk about, I'm sure, each of them on their own podcast, but let me ask. So obviously the nature of angel investing is, you know, it's effectively the ground floor. And so what yardstick, or, you know, how do you measure a founder or founder's ability to execute, knowing that, hey, this is, a brand new endeavor?
So it is a leap of faith, and you have to, at least in my opinion, I have to recognize it as such. I am taking a leap of faith. And that goes back to some of the, where we started this conversation in terms of perceptions and biases that kind of grow out of those perceptions. So it is something of a leap of faith, but the way I try to put in some calculations around the leap that I'm about to take. And as a person who believes in higher beings and things of that nature, I'm accustomed to faith. Most of my life has been driven by faith in terms of the leaps and chances that I've taken. But has this person done this before? That's sort of an obvious one. Yes, no, maybe. What other things has this person done in their lives? What other things have they led? What other new innovative ideas have they created? Where have they had success with that? Who are the people that they know? Who are the people that can vouch for them and vet for them, vet them with respect to opportunities, leadership opportunities that they've had and chances that they've had to bring new ideas to market? How comfortable as I'm sitting there, because 70% of communication is nonverbal. So as I'm meeting these founders, I'm not only listening to what they say, but I'm listening to how they say it and all the nonverbal communication that's going on. Do they look like people that are confident? Do they look like people and act like people who are creative? What's their sense of their own self in terms of their strengths and their weaknesses? How self-aware are they? How willing are they to ask for help? Are they the kind of people who, you know, kind of know it all and can do it all? Or are they the kind of people who are open to information, open to suggestions, open to feedback, open to help, open to getting help, open to asking for help, open to taking help and suggestions? How flexible are they? How adaptable are they? How resilient are they? Because as you and I just talked about, failure is a part of this journey, and the likelihood and the probability of failure is part of it. So how resilient are they? Sometimes I've seen many ideas that start off over here and wind up over here, you know, as you go through and you learn things and you try things and test things, and some things work, some things don't. How resilient are they? How adaptable are they? How flexible are they? And I'm trying to ascertain all those kinds of things as I'm meeting someone, as part of my assessment of them as a leader, and as someone that I would want to invest with and work with.
My own personal experience, I think your assessment is spot on. Let me ask, when it comes to founders, when you're assessing problems, you mentioned being conscious of what you know, and you know it's funny too. I mean, I think of so many other stories I've heard, firsthand and secondhand. You know, of Berkshire Hathaway passing up on Tesla when Elon pitched to Charlie Munger. I have, oddly enough, in my immediate network, people who passed on Home Depot at the seed stage, or even passed up on purchasing the Dallas Cowboys before Jerry decided to pull the trigger. But to your point, it was somewhat similar. You know, this is outside of our wheelhouse, and we don't know that we necessarily are dialed in. So I think when I hear that, for the angels in the audience, you know, please don't be discouraged, you know, if it seems like it's a great fit, but, you know, someone decides to pass because they're just not familiar with the underlying market. Okay, so with that, let's come back to Shrubius. You know, I would love to kind of get a sense. So I heard a whole host of additional assets, mentorships that you're providing the angels who decide to come on the platform. You know, have you seen today like a reoccurring theme either between, certain market problems that are rising above others, whether it's industry based, platform based, tool based, and then, you know, can you recognize like any patterns among, you know, specific cohorts who are really doing a great job of solving some market problems in particular?
So the firm is headquartered in Boston, and Boston is a health tech, fintech, in some cases, ed tech capital. So there's a lot of ideas from that geographical location and founders from that geographical location that are leveraging, you know, technology to solve opportunities, address opportunities, solve problems, challenges within each of those domains: fin, health, education, leveraging technology. AI continues to be, I mean, you almost said nauseam. If you're not saying AI, you're probably not going to get an audience. But having said that, everything and everybody is trying to tie AI into something. Now, having said that, as a technologist myself, I do believe, and after trying to start what was gross profit which, as I mentioned, I tried to start 20 some odd years ago, didn't work. Even with knowledge that it wouldn't work, I would do that 10 times out of 10. So to your point, what I learned from that experience and took away from that experience has been invaluable to me since having that experience. But when I came back to it, initially I had been in investment bank operations, commercial bank operations, investment bank operations, left to do that startup, and then came back to corporate America in investment bank technology. And the reason why I did that is because I felt that technology from that point forward was going to be ubiquitous with life on this planet as we know it. And so I'm not at all surprised to see the advent of technology in every facet of thinking and startups. So there's lots of activity going on in that space. Lots of activity going on in sustainability as well. So as we think about the planet, whether you believe in climate change or not, I happen to believe in climate change. I do think there is a group of people, not I think there are, a group of people who are thinking about how we need to change our lifestyles to create a more sustainable, a more habitable kind of existence and engagement with the planet than we have today. And so lots of ideas with regards to sustainability. Mental health and health in general is another area of startups. So people thinking about how they can create, companies that help to promote a more healthy lifestyle, both physically and mentally, which is really, really good. Those are some of the areas, yeah.
And so, who focus on artificial intelligence, I've participated in a lot of conversations about what's the appropriate way to think about how AI participates in monetization. Meaning, is it a tool, or is it intended to be used explicitly as an outcome? I think it depends on the use case, I'd love to get your perspective. Are you seeing its application being more successful in a specific industry or modality relative to others?
So coming from financial services, I will admit that, A, that's my area of expertise, and it's certainly the domain where I have had the most experience in and have seen firsthand, because I've been the instigator of and implementer of, AI solutions, AI machine learning solutions throughout the course of my career. So I think what's happening in that space is just the tip of the iceberg. I remember one company that I was at, we did a lot of underwriting, and I remember saying to, I was the group CIO reporting to the CEO, and I remember saying to him at one point, I could really displace all of your underwriters with an AI tool. And this was 8-9 years ago. He was incredibly intrigued, and then immediately told me, stand down.
Fast forward.
Down. Yeah, exactly. And typically as an innovator, and I hold a couple of several patents myself, I typically didn't listen well to don't innovate or don't transform. But in this case, again, listening to what he said and then all the nonverbal cues that he gave me, I stood down. but my point is that I think what's happening in the financial services space is, again, just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. And I think the applicability of AI in that space is profound. And I think in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see financial services as we know it to be completely transformed by the application of AI in that space.
Agree, 100%. Yeah, I mean, remember that question? A day doesn't go by that I don't see a new use case popping up across industry, fintech included. The amount of productivity that the technology is yielding is incredible. So totally makes sense. I neglected to ask earlier, how long has Scroobius been in on the available in the market?
The company was incorporated in 2019, which was right before the advent of the global pandemic. So there were 2 years of relatively quiet kind of activity, but it was still going on. So it's been since 2019. So.
All right. And then, so, not sure, but what's the extent that once a match is made that the company will follow on and keep track of the angel investor who received capital, if at all?
We do. We are working on a more formal set of capabilities to track those matches. Today we do it loosely. Tomorrow we want to be far more a far tighter integration between the outcome of those matches. Now we don't want to be regulated by the SEC, so we're not participating in those matches. We're merely making the match and letting both sides of the equation get on with whatever comes of the conversations and the interactions that they have. But we definitely, again, are very interested today, loosely, tomorrow, much more intently, very much interested in the outcome of
Sure.
those interactions.
Love it. Ralph, before we wrap up, question I enjoy asking. If you had an opportunity to go back and have a conversation with your younger self, what would you say?
That's a great question. I think so. I just wrote a book, and the one of the premises of the book is about being president of the United States. And I think if I would go back and have a conversation with my younger self, I perhaps would have said maybe pursuing that aspiration and whatever it would take to get there, perhaps a little sooner. That's about it. Yeah.
I enjoy asking the question, because just like you just did, you can see people start really thinking about it. And the prospect of incorporating what we know today. It's a great premise into what we do, but that's kind of the point too of the podcast. So, I know our audience members love getting your perspective. And what's where and where if someone's interested in reading it, where can they find it?
So the title of the book is We Have Nothing to Lose,
Okay.
A Dark Optimist Call to Action.
Oh. Okay.
And it's available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble.
Love it. Good stuff. And
Yeah.
Ralph, if there's anyone who wants to connect with you, either to co-invest alongside an angel opportunity or to learn more about the platform, how can they find you?
Scroobius.com is the platform for Scroobius. To connect with me, they certainly can find me on LinkedIn. And I have a website called thedarkoptimist.com, all one word. And they can connect with me there as well.
Great stuff. All right. And for our audience, again, Ralph Gross, angel investor and investor and partner with Scroobius, as well as owner of an art store, which is fantastic. I could probably devote another podcast to that as well. In the meantime, again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinTrap Management. Thank you for joining us. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor,
would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag innovators and investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.